Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is Ki Tetzeh. It means when you go out. But before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Blessed are you, O Lord our God, King of the universe, Creator of all things. We thank you and praise you and bless you, and we ask for your soon return. I ask you to be with me as I give this teaching, and bless your people all over this earth that are keeping Shabbat. I ask this in the name of Yeshua. Amen. Okay, the Torah portion, Ki Tetzeh, when you go out, is from Deuteronomy 21, starting at verse 10 to Deuteronomy 25, verse 19. The Haftarah is Isaiah 54, verses 1 to 10, and the Brit Hadashah is Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 to 30, and 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 1 to 5. Deuteronomy 21:10. When you go forth to war against your enemies, and the Lord your God has delivered them into your hands, and you have taken them captive, and you see among the captives a beautiful woman, and have a desire for her, that you would have her for your wife, then you shall bring her to your home, and you shall shave her head and pare her nails. And she shall put the raiment of her captivity from off her, and shall remain in your house, and bewail her father and mother a full month. After that you shall go into her, and be her husband, and she shall be your wife. And it shall be, if you have no delight in her, then you shall go, let her go wherever she will, but you shall not sell her at all for money. Thou shalt not make merchandise of her, because you have humbled her. A couple of things in here. When you're shaving your head and paring your nails, you're doing a couple of things. Shaving your head is an indication that you are taking on a new life, a new identity. We see this with the Nazarite vows, and here we see it with a captive woman who is being taken, really against her will, to be someone's wife. And also, paring your nails has to do with... it's a euphemism for crossing over from being a Gentile to being a Hebrew. It's from being a beast to being a cultured and cultivated person. When the woman is brought into this warrior's home, she has to go from being everything else, being a person of the field, to being part of Hebrew culture, which is now she's got control of herself, she's got a new identity, she's shaved her head, she's pared her nails, she's not wild anymore, you see. And so now that's what this is talking about here. And she's to put the raiment of her captivity from off of her. So whatever clothing she was wearing when she was captured, that's to go away as well. And then she gets a month, 30 days, to mourn for her mother and father, and then he can take her as his wife. But here's the deal. If he doesn't like her, he can't sell her. As always, you see, the law of Moses improves our lives. It improves everyone's life. And, in those days, in the ancient Near East, it was the custom of those people, when they would enslave a woman captured in war, that when they would take her in to be their wife, and, she wasn't satisfactory to them, she would become their slave, and then they could sell her. But you see, Moses says, no, we're not going to treat people that way. You see how the law of Moses actually elevates your culture and your class, and it elevates us to a better way of living. You see, we're not wild. We're not just out there in chaos in the world. You see, we're now we are cultivated. I think this has a reference to also the wild olive tree and the natural olive tree, the natural olive branches rather, and the wild olive branches. You see, there's a difference between being wild and being cultured, you see. And so what the law of Moses does is give us culture. It gives us class. It gives us something that the world doesn't have. And this is why Moses says, you know, no, you're not going to enslave that woman. If you don't want her, then she is free. And she can then go and, make a life for herself, you see? All right, Deuteronomy 21:15. If a man has two wives, one beloved and another hated, and they have borne him children, both the beloved and the hated, and if the firstborn of hers that was hated, then it shall be when he makes his sons to inherit that which he has, that he may not make the son of the beloved firstborn before the son of the hated, which is indeed the firstborn. So if this man has two wives, and in the commentaries when I was reading this, it's generally assumed, though it doesn't explicitly say this here, but it's generally assumed that this is not a man who has two wives simultaneously. We know that that is something that the scripture says is not to be done, even though we have examples, for instance, you know, Solomon and Jacob and David, you know, they had multiple wives. The Lord said that a marriage is between one man and one woman. So even though some of our forefathers have not acted correctly in this realm, we know that that's not how the Lord wants it to be. So this scripture here is generally assumed by the commentators to mean that this man had two wives, and that, you know, maybe one of them died. It's possible also that, you know, there was a divorce. We're going to see in this Torah portion something about divorce as well. And so it's not that he has two wives. It's that he had one, and then now he's got another one, okay? So however that happened. But, you know, it's in my mind, it might be because there's a divorce that happened. And, you know, we see this all the time, that when a divorce has happened, sometimes the father hates the children of the first wife, you know. And so right here, Moses is protecting the status of the firstborn. The firstborn is the firstborn, and it doesn't matter whether it's the wife of the beloved one, the son of the beloved one, or the son of the one that's hated. I suppose you might make the case that Jacob was not partial to Leah, although I don't think he hated Leah. But you see, we have two firstborns in the entire house of Israel, the house of Jacob. We have the firstborn, which is Judah, through which the Messiah came. That's the rightful line for the Messiah. But we also have Joseph, which is going to become, in the millennial kingdom, we're going to find that Joseph has become the sons of Zadok priesthood. And so we actually end up with two firstborns because the Lord has to protect the right of the firstborn. And it's not about the physical firstborns anyway, as we have said in the past. But there are spiritual lessons to be learned here. You see, the Lord does protect our rights. Now, the firstborn is not a physical firstborn, as we have found with Judah and Joseph. Neither one of them is really a firstborn. Even though Joseph was firstborn to Rachel, we're finding out here that the firstborn has to do with who was born first. But we know that the firstborn person, you know, the Ishmaels and the Esaus of the world, they don't have the right spirit. And so really, the firstborn is actually an allusion to the one that has the spiritual access to the Father. By the way, you and I are both firstborns. I've expressed this before in other teachings, how we are in a nation, in a kingdom full of firstborns. Every one of us is a firstborn, you see. And so the Lord protects our right in the kingdom. He's protecting our place in the kingdom here. There's a lesson beyond just, you know, this, the thing about the culture and the man with the two wives. There's a spiritual principle built into this scripture. In fact, all of the laws have spiritual principles. So what is being protected here is our firstborn right in the kingdom, you see? So he says here what is supposed to happen, that the son of the hated for the firstborn, or by the firstborn, is to get a double portion of all that he has, for he is the beginning of his strength. By the way, don't you know that you and I get a double portion? We're firstborns. And our double portions come in order for us to help our brethren. You see, that's what the double portion is. There's the portion for the person, and then the double, the double of that portion is for that person to help the brethren in the family, the brothers and sisters in the family. By the way, didn't the Lord say that the best thing that we could do is help each other? In fact, laying down our lives for each other. You see how this all plays in together? We get double portions, but it's so that, you know, I can help you, you can help me, someone else can help other brethren. We help each other with our double portion. You see, you get that? Because that's the way the spiritual principle is supposed to work. The principles in this Torah portion, Ki Tetzeh, actually are just, they're an extension of all the other principles in the Torah and, of course, in Shoftim of justice, kindness, care, and consideration. So now let's go on to Devarim or Deuteronomy chapter 22 and start reading there. You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep go astray and hide yourself from them. You shall, in any case, bring them again to your brother. See, there's a principle of kindness there, you see. You see something that belongs to your brother, you're supposed to, you know, help him out. Go out of your way. Don't just, you know, say, well, I'm going to ignore that. And no, you're just supposed to go ahead and help your brother. And if your brother is not near to you, or if you don't know who he is, then you shall bring it to your house, and it shall be with you until your brother seeks for it, and then you shall restore it to him again. In like manner shall you do with his ass, and so shall you do with his raiment, his garments, and with all the lost things of your brothers, which he has lost and you have found, you shall do likewise. You may not hide yourself. You may not ignore these things. We must take care of each other. You see, that's part of the justice of the Torah, the kindness, and the care for each other. A woman shall not wear that which pertains to a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. You know, when I was growing up, we just couldn't figure out what this meant. And really what it has to do with is cross-dressing. You know, in our church, they said that, you know, women were not allowed to wear pants because pants pertained to a man. Well, back in the days here, you know, all the men and women both wore dresses, so it didn't make sense to me. But now we see that in this day and age, transvestitism, we know that that's what this pertains to. It's very simply, you're not to purport yourself to be a man when you're a woman, and you're not supposed to purport yourself to be a woman when you're a man. See, it's an abomination to the Lord. By the way, when you are a man and pretend to be a woman, or a woman and pretend to be a man, you know why it's an abomination? Well, not only because you're slapping the Lord in the face like he didn't know what you're supposed to be, but it's unjust. You know why it's unjust? Because there are things that apply to women that don't apply to men, and there are things that apply to men that don't apply to women, you see? And so you practice injustice when you're trying to do the things that don't apply to you. I hope that makes sense. Verse 6, if a bird's nest chanced to be before you in the way, in a tree or on the ground, and there be young ones or eggs, and the dam sitting on the young or upon the eggs, you shall not take the dam with the young. Don't take the mother with the young. But you will let the mother go and take the young for you, that it may be well with you, that you may prolong your days. You know, this commandment right here is called the least commandment. This is the least amount of mercy, you see, that you can show. This is the least amount. This kindness and mercy to this bird. You see, we're supposed to show mercy and kindness to everything, to even the birds, you see. And so when you show this least commandment, this least amount of mercy, this is the least amount. Actually, what it does is it turns it on its head and says, this is a great mercy. You understand how that works? That when you actually end up being kind to something that supposedly insignificant, right? It turns into a great mercy. The Lord calls upon us to be merciful, you see? Verse 8, when you build a new house, then you shall make a battlement or a railing around your roof, that you bring not blood upon your house if a man fall from there. Here again, you know, the Lord, OSHA is not a new thing, you know. The Lord has his own safety rules too. Why? Because he cares about the welfare of his people. This is why I love to take people to Ki Tetzeh when, especially this chapter, when they say, oh, those laws are just too hard and burdensome. Really? Let's go to Deuteronomy 22 verse 8, and then now let's pull out all the OSHA regulations, shall we? I don't think I need to say anything more about that. You get the idea. Verse 9, you shall not sow your vineyard with various seeds, lest the fruit of your seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. You shall not plow with an ox and an ass together. You know verse 9, we know why we're not supposed to do that, because the Lord does not like mixtures. You know, he doesn't want us breeding one kind of thing with another thing, which is, by the way, one of the things that the pharmaceutical companies and the government entities are doing. They're breeding, you know, all kinds of animals together, also breeding them with human genes and so forth. So, but I don't have time to spend a lot of time on that. But let's talk about verse 10. You shall not plow with an ox and an ass together. Well, not only are they two different kinds of animals, you know, but this is, spiritually, this would be something that's unequally yoked. The ox is much bigger than the donkey or the mule, right? You cannot accomplish anything when you're unequally yoked. One is always going to be pulling against the other. The ox is physically stronger and can beat up on the donkey, but the donkey is more stubborn than the ox. You see how that works in a, like say, in a marriage. Let's just put it in a marriage context. You know, he can beat up on her, but she can be stubborn and make his life miserable, you see? And so this is often what happens. You know, you've got an ox and an ass in a marriage. Oh my. We're going to talk a little bit more about marital relationships here in a minute. You shall not wear a garment of diverse sorts or various sorts, as of woolen and linen together. You shall make fringes upon the four corners of your clothing that you use to cover yourself. If a man take a wife and go into her and hate her and give occasions of speech against her and bring up an evil name upon her and say, I took this woman, and when I came to her I found her not a maid, then shall the father of the damsel and her mother take and bring forth the tokens of the damsel's virginity to the elders of the city and the gate. And the damsel's father shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man to wife, and he hates her. And, lo, he has given occasions of speech against her, saying, I found not your daughter a maid, and yet these are the tokens of my daughter's virginity. And they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city, and the elders of that city shall take that man and chastise him. And they shall immerse him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the damsel, because he has brought up an evil name upon a virgin of Israel. And she shall be his wife. He may not put her away all his days. Now, you know, one of the things that couples like to do is, you know, the husbands like to get with their friends, and the wife likes to get with her friends, and they like to badmouth their husband or their wife. Well, we see very clearly here that the man is not supposed to badmouth his wife. Might I say that the converse is true, and the woman is not supposed to be badmouthing her husband. First of all, if you are in covenant with the Lord as a suzerain covenant, you know, that vertical covenant, you are also in a parity covenant with all your brothers and sisters in the Commonwealth of Israel. And your husband or your wife is a member of that parity covenant. You're not supposed to be going around doing hateful speech against other people. That's called gossip. And the Lord hates gossip. See, gossip happens when you're willing to go ahead and just backbite people without bringing forth evidence and taking them to the judge and going through all the things that, you know, the Lord said you're supposed to do when there's a problem with somebody, you know. You just go ahead and you just keep making your case. Well, actually what you're doing is gossip is a lie. Now, you may be telling the truth, but as long as you're not telling the truth in the proper manner, it's still a lie. It's still gossip, you see. And so here we have this evidence of this man is speaking ill of his wife. And really, that's the issue in a marriage, isn't it? Well, they won't say that, you know, she wasn't a virgin when I married her. But they'll say, well, she doesn't please me. And that's really the same thing. Husbands and wives, I would urge you, if you have problems Go get somebody to help you with your problems. Obviously, you've probably already gone through the protocol of asking each other to reconcile, and you just have found it difficult to do that. You need a third party. You need to go get and you need to do it together. You know, not one going to get this person to help and the other one going over here to get this person to help. No, you need to, you know, agree upon a person to help you. You need to go through the protocol. You need to go before the brethren. And so you need to make some kind of an agreement where you can do that successfully. So I hate to see people in a marriage, castigating and ostracizing and talking ill of their spouse. I just hate that because the Lord is so displeased with that. Verse 20, but if this thing is true and the tokens of virginity are not found for the damsel, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house and the men of her city shall stone her with stones that she die because she has wrought folly in Israel to play the whore in her father's house so that you shall put away evil from among you. The other side of that coin that I was talking about is, you know, the spiritual lesson here, of course, also is the playing the whore. When you play the whore, you deserve to die. And by the way, the whore in the end of days does die. We know that. And so there are spiritual lessons for us here. These seem to be like they're not kind. But they are kind. They are just. Why are they kind and just? Well, I'm going to tell you. It's because the Lord has these laws for the community. The Lord's laws regard the community first and the individual second. If we do it the other way around, if he was to regard the individual first and the community second, then he would never have a holy community. We've got to have the holy community for us to live in so that the individuals in the community have a standard to live up to, you see. So if you try to reverse that and say that these are not fair and you know, these are, her punishment is greater than his and so forth and so on, then we disregard the fact that the Lord is making laws regarding the community, because he says here in verse 21 that it's about putting the evil away from among you. And now she dies. The whore dies. A whore always dies. But he never gets to divorce his wife. By the way, Yeshua never said of his wife, the one that he divorced, he never said anything like this against her, or he would not have been able to divorce her. You know that? He never wrongly accused his wife. See, this man wrongly accused his wife. Yeshua never wrongly accused his wife. That's why he was able to divorce her. And so because this man wrongly accused his wife, he's not able to ever put her away. He's not ever able to get a divorce from her. So there's that spiritual lesson as well. So anyway, let's go on. If a damsel that is a virgin be betrothed to a husband and a man find her in the city and lie with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city and you shall stone them with stones that they die. The damsel, because she cried not being in the city, and the man because he humbled his neighbor's wife, so shall you put evil from you. Now, this is a case of adultery. If she doesn't cry out, she's committed adultery. But if a man find a betrothed damsel in the field and the man force her and lie with her, then the man only that lay with her shall die. But the reason is because it's assumed that, you know, you can't prove whether or not she cried out. And he could say, well, she didn't cry out, but no one can determine that because there may not have been anybody around for miles. While in the city, if she's crying out, somebody's probably hearing her, right? Because those people lived in very small, enclosed, gated and, walled up cities, it would be almost impossible for somebody to be screaming and crying and not be heard. But to the damsel you shall do nothing. There is in the damsel no sin worthy of death. For as when a man rises against his neighbor and slays him, even so is this matter. For ye found her in the field, and the betrothed damsel cried, and there was none to save her. If a man find a damsel that is a virgin, which is not betrothed, and lay hold on her, and lie with her, and they be found, then the man shall lay with her, who lay with her shall give her to the damsel's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife, because he has humbled her. He may not put her away all his days, and a man shall not take his father's wife, nor discover his father's skirt. Now, let's go back to verse 29. People always ask me about what constitutes marriage before the Lord. And I always go back to this one thing. It's about the sex. If there's been a sexual relationship, that is considered a marriage. And then people will always say, well, but what about the witnesses, and what about the covenant, you know, the oaths and the vows and all of that? It just says here that if he lays with her, and he's found out, he's to pay for her, and she's his wife. It doesn't say there has to be a ceremony, and, you know, there has to be all this, and that has to go on, and we have to stomp on the glass. No. He had sex with her, she had sex with him. They are married. When it's discovered that this has happened, they're regarded as married. It's all about the sex, which is the thing about adultery. If you have sex outside your marriage, what you are doing is you are bringing a third party into your covenant relationship. You see, Deuteronomy 23, verse 1, he that is wounded in the stones or have his privy member cut off shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord. A bastard shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord, even to the 10th generation shall he not enter into the congregation of the Lord. An Ammonite or Moabite shall not enter into the congregation of the Lord to their 10th generation. You see, the Ammonites and Moabites are regarded as bastards as well. Because they met you not with bread and with water in the way when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam the son of Beor of Petor of Mesopotamia to curse you. By the way, you know, I have said in my teaching on Esau that Bela, the son of Beor, is the same guy as Balaam, the son of Beor. See, Bela, son of Beor. Balaam, son of Beor. They're the same person. Bela, son of Beor, was the first king of Edom. He is also the guy that came to curse the children of Israel. He was already king of Edom, you see. I believe he was already king of Edom. I believe that's why the Lord says Balaam, the son of Beor, right here. Now, I could be wrong about the timing of that. I'm not infallible, but the point that I'm trying to make more than the timing of when Balaam became king of Edom is that Bala, the son of Beor, is the same guy as Balaam, the son of Beor. Nevertheless, the Lord your God would not hearken to Balaam, but the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing to you because the Lord your God loved you. I want to stop here, and I want to read something that came up in Beast Watch News this week, and it is this. There's a blasphemy challenge going on, okay? It's encouraging people to curse God. And here's what the headline says. It says, an internet challenge is calling upon people to post a clip of them cursing God or rejecting the Holy Spirit's work in their lives. The so-called blasphemy challenge is a way to promote atheism, according to promoters. Promoters are even sending free DVD documentaries against Christianity to teens who complete the challenge and post their video online. Now, it says here that the blasphemy challenge exposes the crock that is Christian doctrine. And, of course, one of the Beast Watch readers said, okay, but just try blaspheming Allah and see what happens, you see. Now, what does this have to do with this Torah portion? Well, the Lord didn't hearken to Balaam, so what did Balaam do? The Lord, Balaam told Balak to get the children of Israel to curse themselves. And so that's what this thing here, this headline in Beast Watch News is all about. Let's get these people to curse themselves. And by the way, you know, the Lord is going to take care of that. He took care of them when they cursed, you know, themselves the first time. And he's going to take care of that again. Verse 6. You shall not seek their peace nor their prosperity all your days forever. You shall not abhor an Edomite, for he is your brother. People are always asking me, well, on Facebook, they'll go, well, I don't, those people in Israel, they're, I'm not related to them. Oh, guess what? There are Edomites mixed in with the Jews, and by the way, the Edomite is your brother. So, you need to figure out which of your brothers is on the right side, which one of them is fighting for the state of Israel, and which one is fighting against the state of Israel. That we do need to have some wisdom about. And no, this current political state of Israel is not the kingdom, the messianic kingdom, but it is the prophesied entity that the Lord said would arise at the end of days, because there have to be things that happen in Israel in order for the Lord to have a covenant lawsuit against Esau, you see. And so we need this state of Israel, and we need to stand with Israel. But in the meantime, we're not to abhor or hate Edomites, because he is our brother. You know what we should be doing for those Muslims, those Palestinians, those Hamas people, and even these ISIS people? We should be praying for them. We should be praying that there are people in amongst them who will turn their hearts over to Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, and will stop being an Edomite and will convert to being Hebrew. That's what we should be praying for them. Because, you know, the Lord said to pray for your enemies and bless them that curse you, right? And by the way, he says that if you do these things, you'll heap coals upon their heads. So, for many, many reasons, we need to be praying for our brothers who are Edomites, for their salvation in Yeshua. And it says, the children that are begotten of them shall enter into the congregation of the Lord in their third generation. So Edomites can enter into the congregation in the third generation. When the host goes forth against your enemies, then keep you from every wicked thing. Boy, is that a good idea. You know, I had this recent thing with my grandchildren. One was in trouble and the other one was talking about it. And I turned to the other one and I said, you need to keep your mouth shut. Because when this one is getting in trouble, you should be frightened that you could get in trouble, you see. And so keep yourself from that wicked thing of, you know, getting involved and you know, because there are other wicked things that people can do when the host goes forth against enemies. But anyway, it's just kind of an interesting thing. I was also thinking at that time that there's a half-hour silence in the heavens at a certain point, you know, and it's kind of like everybody's being real quiet there. Like something is going on the earth. We need to just shut our mouth. It just takes a brazen person to keep yakking when somebody else is being punished. You just kind of want to be just a little bit more circumspect, I would assume. If there be among you any man that is not clean by reason of uncleanness that chances him by night, then he shall go out of the camp, shall not come within the camp, but it shall be when the evening comes, he shall wash himself with water, then the sun goes down, and he shall come into the camp again. You shall have a paddle, and when you go to the bathroom, you dig a hole, and, you know, this is another instance of kindness and care for others. You know, you just want to keep other people from, you know, coming in contact with, you know, whatever it is that comes out of you. For the Lord your God walks in the midst of the camp, and so, not only for other people, but for the Lord. You see, the Lord walks in the midst of your camp, and he walks in our camp to deliver us, and to give up our enemies before us, you know, in order to bring our enemies to their knees. Therefore, the camp needs to be holy. So here we have this kindness and care that we're supposed to do for the Lord. Now, we don't always see that what we're supposed to do for the Lord, the things we're supposed to do for him, that they are doing a justice or a kindness or anything to him or for him. But he's our king. Above all, we should be treating him with kindness and with care and respect, you see. And it says here, you shall not deliver to his master the servant which escaped from his master to you. He shall dwell with you, among you, in that place which he shall choose, in one of your gates, where it likes him best. You shall not oppress him. There shall be no whore of the daughters of Israel, nor a sodomite of the sons of Israel. You see, we're not supposed to practice whoredom, which is part of idolatry, and we're not supposed to practice sodomy, which is part of homosexuality. You shall not bring the hire of a whore or the price of a dog to the house of the Lord. You see, these are abominations to the Lord because these are practiced among the unruly Gentiles. You shall not lend upon usury. You not to take interest for money that you lend to your brother, you know, because he needs food or he needs clothing or he needs whatever. So the usury of money, the usury of victuals, food, you're not supposed to take anything from him that he has gotten from you in order to help him live, to get food, to get clothing, to take care of his family, whatever it is. You're not supposed to take money. You're not supposed to take food in trade or anything else from him in trade for money that you have lent to him. To a stranger, you may lend upon usury. You may, you know, charge interest to a stranger. But to your brother, you shall not lend upon usury or charge interest, that the Lord your God may bless you in all that you set your hand to. Why is the Lord saying this here? Well, it's because we're supposed to do what the Lord does, and he doesn't charge us interest for our salvation, you see. When you vow a vow to the Lord your God, you shall not slack to pay it, for the Lord will surely require it of you, and it would be a sin in you. But if you shall forbear to vow, it shall be no sin. So if you say, I don't want to make that vow, it's not a sin to you. Vows and oaths are voluntary, but if you swear one, you better keep it. That which is gone out of your lips shall you keep and perform, even a free will offering, according as you have vowed to the Lord, which you have promised with your mouth. When you come to your neighbor's vineyard, then you may eat grapes, you're full till you're full at your own pleasure, but you now shall not put any in your vessel. In other words, when you're hungry and you're walking along, you're allowed to eat until you're full out of somebody's vineyard, but you're not allowed to take a basket or a pot or some or whatever to put grapes in. You're not allowed to, you put them in your body, but not in something that you can carry away. When you come to the standing corn of your neighbor, then you may pluck the ears with your hand, but you shall not move a sickle. See, you're not allowed to harvest in somebody else's vineyard or in their cornfield. You are allowed to, feed yourself freely. The Lord wants everybody to be free to eat something. You see what I'm saying? So, but you're not allowed to harvest their fields. Now let's go to chapter 24. It says in verse 1, when a man takes a wife and marries her, and it comes to pass that she finds no favor in his eyes, because he has found some uncleanness in her, let him write her a bill of divorcement and give it in her hand and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. Now, I want to talk about this because the truth about this is what Yeshua says in Matthew 5:31. It has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. In verse 32, but I say to you that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. So when you carry out this divorce, you're causing your wife to commit adultery. And furthermore, whosoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. Now, is the Lord changing his mind here? Or is he doing away with something? Or, you know, what's going on here? Because what he said here is different than what Moses has said here in Deuteronomy 24. So let's go and look at, now we're going to leave Matthew chapter 5. We're going to go to Matthew chapter 19. Yeshua said to them, Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, suffered you to put away your wives, but from the beginning it was not so. Now, I'm going to stop right here. We're going to go to verse 9 in a minute, but I want to stop right here because he's saying that Moses changed the way that the Lord wanted marriage to be. Moses allowed these people to divorce each other, okay? But it's because of the hardness of their hearts. Why did Moses have the right to do that? Well, you know, we have the principle in Shoftim chapter 7, or Deuteronomy chapter 17 in the Torah portion, Shoftim, of the priest and the judge making a decree that becomes part of the Torah. And you see, Moses acted as a judge in the land. And of course, his brother Aaron, was a priest. And so I don't know this for, I mean, there's nothing in scripture. There's nothing in the extra biblical scriptures. And there, I haven't really looked, but I have never seen anything from the Targums, from the Mishnah or the Talmud or any of that. That talks about this, but if Moses was able to make this change to the Torah because of people's hardened hearts, I'm thinking that he did it as a judge with his brother, the priest, and said that we're going to allow this. But it's a matter of what Yeshua said to the apostles or to the disciples, that what you bind on the earth is bound in heaven. Remember? And that's the principle that comes out of Shoftim. And so, because of that, and because of my speculation, and that's what it is, it's speculation, somewhere along the line, Moses saw that the men in that congregation called the house of Jacob or the house of Israel were not able to be happy with their wives. He probably, and I'm just speculating here again, he might have actually had a lot of people coming to him saying, I can't get along with her, or possibly her saying, I can't get along with him. And so he finally, maybe this is how it happened, said to Aaron, you know, let's just go ahead and make this decree and say that we can allow this thing. But I'm telling you that that's not the way that Yeshua wants it to be. And he said here, you know, Moses did it because of the hardness of his heart. And in Matthew chapter 5, verse 31, it says, it has been said, meaning, you know, out of the Torah, out of the law, whosoever puts away his wife, let him give her a writing of divorcement. And in Matthew 5:32, and again in Matthew chapter 19, verse 9, he says, and he repeats in Matthew chapter 19, verse 9, he repeats what he said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 32. He says, I say to you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, commits adultery. And whosoever marries her, is put away, commits adultery. So both of them commit adultery, you see. But why is it important for us to understand that whosoever puts his wife away, except it be for fornication? Well, we have this established in the Torah in the bitter waters, right? When the husband suspects that his wife is unfaithful, he brings her before the high priest. Yeshua knew for certain that his wife was unfaithful, that she was committing fornication with other gods, right? That is the only reason that there is for divorce. All other reasons are just because of the hardness of your heart. And Yeshua said that's not the way it's supposed to be. And when you go off and marry somebody else, regardless of what Moses said back there, when I said first that this is not supposed to happen, Moses let it happen, and therefore it stands as part of the decrees. You see how the Lord sticks by his own word? He says, this is not the way I wanted it, but Moses did this thing. But I'm telling you that there's a spiritual reality to this, folks. I'm speaking on behalf of Yeshua now. When he's talking to this audience, he's saying, I'm telling you, there's a spiritual reality. You're both committing adultery. This is why I personally keep telling people, we really don't have permission to go off and marry other people. When now we see it happening in, you know, Christianity and in the Hebrew roots community all the time. And, you know, you can go to the literal letter of the law. This is one of those areas where now we see the difference between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. The letter of the law is, yes, you may go ahead because we made a decree. We can't take it anymore. You guys complaining about your husbands and wives to us, you know, Moses and Aaron possibly saying that. And the spirit of the law, which Yeshua says, if you do this, you're committing adultery. So, you see, the letter of the law and the spirit of the law in this instance are different. And I, personally, I believe it's better to keep the spirit of the law rather than the letter of the law, okay? You can agree or disagree with me on this, but remember, you don't have to like me, but you do have to love me. Okay, moving on. And the latter husband hate her and write her a bill of divorcement and gives it in her hand and sends her out of his house. If the latter husband die, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, may not take her again. This is why Yeshua had to die. Just because he sent her out of the house, just because he gave her a bill of divorcement, doesn't mean that their covenant went away. It means that she's defiled when she takes another husband and he can't take her back again. This is an abomination before the Lord, and it is a cause of sin in the land, which the Lord has given you for an inheritance. So Yeshua had to die in order to sever that bond. This is what Paul was trying to teach the children of Israel in his day. You see, that he was trying to teach his people about this problem here, and why the husband, why Yeshua had to die in order for him to bring the people back to him. Verse 5, when a man has a new wife, he shall not go out to war, neither shall he be charged with any business, but he shall be at home, free at home, 1 year, and shall cheer up his wife, which he has taken. You know, in Genesis chapter 3, verse 16, it talks about the wife's desire being for the husband. But you see, now, beyond the fact that that's just actually, it's a consequence and it's not really a curse in the way that we often think of curses, but I don't have time to go into that right now. But the thing is that we take that as, you know, this is the curse upon the woman. The husband is going to rule over her, and her desire is going to be for him. Well, let's just say for a minute that that is a curse, and we see what the Torah does for curses. It reverses curses, and the Torah reverses curses. You know what? That's a good phrase right there. The Torah reverses curses, because look what happens here. This man's desire is to be for his wife. He's supposed to stay home and cheer her up for a whole year. You see how that got reversed in the Torah? Okay. No man shall take the nether or the upper millstone to pledge, for he takes a man's life to pledge. If a man be found stealing any of his brethren or the children of Israel and makes merchandise of him or sells him, then that thief shall die. You see, this is the slave trader here. Slave traders. You don't take your brethren and put them into servitude and to make them into slaves. And here we go in verse 8, we're talking about the plague of leprosy, and to make sure that you observe all the commands that have to do with Sa'arat, with Tazria, and all of that. And to remember the Lashon Hara, what the Lord did to Miriam, in the way, it says, by the way, when they were come forth out of Egypt. Remember not to speak out against your leaders, okay? Your leaders that are training you in the way of the Torah. Now, when I say not to speak out, I don't mean not to correct them. I mean don't speak ill of them. Don't try to cause their ministries to go away. If you've got a problem with a leader, you do need to go and talk to them. That leader. That's not what this is talking about. What Miriam did was she spoke out against Moses. Aaron spoke out against Moses, you see. That's what Lashon Hara is. It's speaking out against the leader in order to destroy that leader's ministry. That's the difference between Lashon Hara and gossip. Gossip is what you do to your brothers and sisters, okay? It's the lies that you tell about your brothers and sisters. But Lashon Hara has to do with what you're doing to your leaders. And they may be wrong. They may be in the wrong. But there is a protocol and a way to handle it. You don't go around speaking ill of them. When you do lend your brother anything, you shall not go to his house to fetch his pledge. In other words, when he owes you something and you want it back, and he, you know, is probably not giving it back to you like you think he should, you're not supposed to go to his house to fetch his pledge. You know, you've lent him something and he said, well, I'll pledge to you this thing, for you lending me this thing. Well, if he doesn't do it, then, you can't go to his house to get it. You shall stand abroad, and the man to whom you do lend shall bring out the pledge abroad to you. So, you're not to approach his house. You're supposed to approach him away from his house. You stand abroad, and that man is to bring the pledge for what you lent him out into the broad to you. Why? Well, that's a protection for you. Because if you go into somebody's house to get the thing that he pledged to you in order for you to lend him whatever it was you lent him, you know, he could make a false accusation against you and say that you stole something. So this is really a protection for you. So you don't go into his house. You stand abroad. You stand, away from his house and get him to bring it outside of the house. You don't go into his house to get it. If the man be poor, you shall not sleep with his pledge. It says, in any case, you shall deliver him the pledge again when the sun goes down. If he's poor and all he's given you is his raiment, is his garments, and what did he give it to you for? Well, probably because he needed food. You know, if somebody is that poor and they give you their coat, you know what? You're supposed to return that coat to them by the time of sundown. And my advice to you is, if somebody needs some food, don't take anything from them. Just give them the food. Give them the means, because look, this is a kindness that you're supposed to do. Remember the double portion that firstborns get? You have this double portion in order to help your brethren, right? You shall not oppress an hired servant that is poor and needy, whether they are of your brethren or of the strangers that are in your land within your great gates. Don't oppress them. At his day, you shall give him his hire, neither shall the sun go down upon it. In other words, when you hire somebody, you pay him that same day. And then in verse 16, fathers shall not be put to death for the children, neither shall children be put to death for their fathers. Every man pays his own death sentence, basically. But this is not to say that the Lord is contradicting himself where regards the sins of the fathers being visited upon the children to the third and fourth generation. That's a whole different thing. Those children are not dying for the sins of their fathers. No, they're being given the chance to repent on their own behalf and on the behalf of their fathers, you see. And by the way, that's a mercy that the Lord has built into this system, where when we come to the realization that we have these sins in our lives because our fathers had these sins in their lives, there's a mercy there that we can ask for forgiveness for our fathers. Now, I know our fathers are dead, and I don't want people writing to me asking me, can we pray for the dead and they be forgiven? No, that's not what I'm talking about. The fathers regards the sins of the nation going backward in time. Okay, that's what it's talking about. So this is a mercy that the Lord has built into his own system. You see, verse 17, you shall not pervert the judgment of the stranger, nor of the fatherless, nor take a widow's raiment to pledge. You see, the Lord's more mercy and care giving here. But you shall remember that you were a bondman in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you out of there. Therefore, I command you to do this thing. He's commanding us to be kind to strangers, to orphans, and to widows, you see, and not to oppress the poor and strangers and your brethren who are in poverty. And when you hire somebody, don't make them wait a week or 2 weeks or a month for their payment. Pay him on that day. Verse 19, when you cut down your harvest in your field and have forgot a sheaf in your field, you will not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. Now, this is, you know, at the time of harvest, when now the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow can bring their baskets and their pots and whatever they need to harvest in your field. If you have not harvested at all, then they come in and they continue and finish up the harvest. You see, that's another one of the Lord's mercies. And it's, you know, this is actually a better welfare system here. You know, yes, we're to help those people who are poor, but also they get a chance to help themselves. You see how much better welfare system that is by the Lord's hand than at the hands of the state? When you have beaten your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. And it's the same thing. When you have gathered the grapes of your vineyard, don't glean it all again afterward. It's all for everyone else, the stranger, the orphans, and the widows. You shall remember. The Lord keeps telling us twice here in this chapter 24 for us to remember our bondage in Egypt. And I think, you know, when you see commands like that in close proximity, when the Lord repeats himself, that he's really wanting you to understand that there's something about this. And usually, it is something to do with prophecy. I shouldn't say usually. It's often something to do with prophecy. Because, at the end of days, we're gonna find ourselves in the same kind of bondage. And so, we're being told here how to treat each other in order for the Lord to deliver us out of that bondage. And now, in chapter 25, very quickly, it says that if there's a controversy between people and they come to judgment, the judges judge them. That, you know, then the judges will justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. And it doesn't matter if you're a rich, wicked person or a poor, wicked person. If you're wicked, you're going to be condemned. And if the wicked man is worthy to be beaten, that judge shall cause him to lie down and be beaten before his face. You know, this is actually another one of those mercies. Because, you know, judges sit on the benches in America, and I doubt that very few of them ever go to watch the punishment that they mete out to other people. You're going to be very careful as a judge to, you know, make sure that the sentence that you mete out to somebody is justified, because you're going to have to watch that person, you see, be beaten. And it says 40 stripes he may give him and not exceed, lest if he should exceed and beat him above these many stripes, then your brother would seem vile to you. You shall not muzzle the ox when he treads out the corn. In other words, you know, if your animals are working for you, let them work. Let them eat while they work, rather. If brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go to her and take her to him as a wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she bears shall succeed in the name of his brother, which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. See, the Lord is not willing that any should perish. He is not willing that any name be put out of Israel. And so he, as a mercy, he asks men to do this for their brother's wives. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go to the gates to the elder and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of his husband's brother. Then the elders of his city shall call him and speak to him, and if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come to him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off his foot and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done to that man that will not build up his brother's house. You know, doing this thing with the shoe and spitting in his face is the ultimate insult. And such a man that would receive this insult and offense, and deservedly so, this will never be forgotten of this man. So very few men would ever say, oh, no, I'm not going to raise up a brother, you know, my brother's son. I'm not going to do that. Because who among them are going to want to be offended and insulted, and rightfully so, as punishment like this? His name shall be called in Israel, the house of him that has loosed his shoe, has his shoe loosed. So you see, This guy, his name is going to be the house of him that has his shoe loosed, Na'al Kalatz. Na'al Kalatz, that's what that is in Hebrew. And so this guy's name, this his legacy is going to be that he did not do the right thing and he was rightfully insulted and rightfully offended. Verse 11, when men strive together one with another, and the wife of the one draws near to deliver her husband out of the hand of him that smites him, and puts forth her hands and takes him by the secrets, that means, you know, she grabs his groin, then you shall cut off her hand, your eyes shall not pity her. See, one of the things is, you know, you just don't get to do that. You don't get to cause a man to not be able to have children. You shall not have in your bag various weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house various measures, a great and a small. But you shall have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure you shall have, that your days may be lengthened in the land the Lord God gives you. For all that do such things and all that do unrighteously are an abomination to the Lord your God. Remember what Amalek did to you by the way when you were come forth out of Egypt, how he met you by the way and smote the hindmost of you, even of all that were feeble behind you, when you were faint and weary, and he feared not God. Therefore it shall be, when the Lord your God has given you rest from all your enemies round about, in the land which the Lord your God gives you for an inheritance to possess it, that you shall blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. You shall not forget it. You see, I told you in the beginning, this Torah portion is an extension of Shoftim, and it really is about justice, the Lord doing justice to you, you doing justice to the Lord, and you doing justice to your brothers and sisters. And not only justice, but mercy and kindness to the Lord and to your brothers and sisters, you see? And so this Torah portion is a very hopeful Torah portion. If we would just treat each other this way, regardless of how we felt in our hearts about our brethren, why, you know, we would have a very happy community. Well, I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.